Now it's our weekly look at Congress with USA Today Politics Editor Paul Singer. Today is the first day of the new lame duck session. It's the last chance for Congress to pass legislation before the new members are inaugurated in January. On the docket, a possible Keystone XL pipeline vote, government funding, and Ebola aid. And as the world got news of a new agreement between the U.S. and China on climate change, so did Congress, and not all members were happy. In fact, Mitch McConnell was pretty upset. Paul Singer joins us now, as he joins us every week at this time. Paul, it's great to have you here. Thank you.
How you doing, Veronica? Good to be have the Congress back to play with.
Well, right. So lame duck Congress beginning. Is there any legislation that Congress needs to pass before the end of the session?
Well, yeah. The first thing that everybody agrees they have to pass is the government funding runs out December 11th. So it is very clear that nobody wants the government to shut down. Mitch McConnell, the new Senate Majority Leader, or will be new in January, said clearly there will be no shutdowns. Now, the question is, what does that mean? Do they pass another short-term spending bill for a couple of months, get it into January, February, and then take it up with the new Congress? Or do they pass a bill that includes the entire year funding through September 2015, which the Democrats are heavily advocating for? Of course, because the Democrats still control the majority. So they have to pass something. What it will be, it remains a bit of a mystery.
So that is a must-do on the list. Are there other things that are looking interesting to Congress, but maybe not as pressing?
Yeah, there's a couple things that are still very high on the list. For starters, President Obama has requested $6 billion for Ebola, emergency funding for Ebola. This will probably be wrapped up in whatever the funding bill is. But this is a critical thing that I think both parties want to see move as quickly as possible. Republicans are saying basically they want to make sure it's spent properly, but nevertheless they still want to move this legislation as fast as they can. And then the other one is also a spending portion is for the war against ISIS. So, you know, we're going to need several billion dollars to continue bombing runs and now, you know, more advisors on the ground in Iraq and Syria to be assisting the Iraqi army in fighting off these the Islamic State terrorists. So those things everybody wants to get moving. Republicans have some other agenda items on the list that are sort of interesting. There are some tax cuts that expire. If those are not extended by the end of the year, it would essentially turn into a retroactive tax hike. So Republicans are trying to make sure they tackle those. There's some bills, little bills that most folks wouldn't have heard about, like a terrorism insurance bill, stuff like that, that has to get done by the end of the year. These are all things that bills were written previously with the end of December deadlines. And now those deadlines are coming to bear, and if we don't get these bills passed, bad things happen.
Now, this is considered, as we said, a lame duck Congress. What typically happens during times like this? Is it really just as fallow a period as it can be?
You know, it's interesting. Depending, this lame duck will be particularly interesting because you're converting from Senate control by the Democrats to Senate control by the Republicans in January. And what makes that interesting is that the Democrats now in the Senate want to get as much done as possible so that the bills that pass with a Democratic stamp on them. The Republicans want to prevent passage of as much legislation as possible so that they can wait till their Republican reinforcements arrive in January and they can write a better bill. So it's this really interesting push and pull. You know, one of the things the Democrats are likely to do is try and get a bunch of Obama appointees confirmed while they still have the majority, under the theory that it'll be a lot harder to get those people confirmed for judicial appointments, particularly once Republicans take charge.
But hearings on appointees, that can take a lot of time and be a drawn-out process. Is that something that's feasible?
Hearings? What are these things you call hearings? The beauty of the Senate, of course, is that there are no real rules. So, you know, if the majority leader, who for the next 6 weeks or so is still Harry Reid from Nevada, still a Democrat, if he wants to march a couple of these things up onto the floor for a vote, a couple of these names of people to the floor for a vote, he can do it. And he may have the votes to win.
he may have the votes to win, but it's never that simple, is it?
Well, no, but keep in mind that this year they changed the rules on some of these nominees, so you no longer need 60 votes, you only need 51, which drove Republicans insane when they did it, when they changed the threshold for these nominees. These are sort of the sub-cabinet, non-Supreme Court nominees, other judicial nominees. That's exactly why they did it, because they couldn't get any of these things passed, and so they said, well, to heck with it, we will just lower the threshold. Now, that's the kind of threshold that they could actually probably muster during the lame duck, because all the Democrats realize that starting in January, they will be the minority and will have almost no rights at all.
And given that, the fact that the Democrats could do something like this, try to get some nominees out there for the Democrats before they're out of power, would that be sort of a gesture at this point of bad faith, something that might, to use some language I've seen today, poison the well, get sort of animosity going between the two parties before they go forward, or is this just what you do?
Yeah, I know. They were all singing Kumbaya 3 days ago, but, the well, I've been covering Washington for 30 years. The well here has never been particularly clear water to start with, and, it's just a matter of time. I mean, at the moment, Senator Mary Landrieu raced to the floor, literally within, minutes of Harry Reid opening the session, and announced her plan to bring a bill up to approve the Keystone Pipeline. This is the big north-south pipeline bringing oil down from tar pits in Canada. Well, it's funny about Mary Landrieu bringing this to the floor, and she's still on the floor now. She's been up there for an hour talking about this thing, because she is the unsettled seat in the Senate. She did not win her reelection. She's in a runoff. And the runoff is against a guy named Congressman Bill Cassidy of Louisiana. Well, so Mary Landrieu's on the Senate floor saying we should vote right now on this XL pipeline bill.
Because she thinks this is going to help her in the election, in the runoff.
Yeah, and it's giving her several opportunities, and several other members several opportunities, to stand up and say, by the way, I'm the chair of the Energy Committee, which matters to Louisiana. And other senators stand up and say, I'd like to congratulate my good friend Mary Landrieu, the chairman of the Energy Committee, which is helpful to Louisiana, for bringing up this bill. Well, House Republicans responded and said, okay, fine, we'll bring up the bill tomorrow. And it's a bill sponsored by, wait for it, Bill Cassidy, your opponent in the Senate race.
Wow, so some interesting maneuvering going on. So should she succeed in bringing this bill, does that endear her to anyone, voters, environmentalists?
Who knows? I think the theory is, and it's a good theory, she has to win an election in about 3 weeks. Being able to stand on the floor, introduce a bill, get it passed for something that's very popular in her state, because Louisiana is very heavily reliant on the petrochemical industry. So you're able to stand on the floor and pass this bill and get praise for it and say, see, I can still achieve things in the Congress. You need to keep me here. It certainly can't hurt. Whether it really helps or not is a different story. I mean, she's considered to be a serious underdog for that race.
We're talking right now with USA Today's Paul Singer, politics editor, and we're talking about Congress right now. The lame duck session has begun. We're talking about some of those things which are on the table, things that could possibly happen, possibly a vote on the Keystone XL pipeline, talking about some potential funding for Ebola, some action perhaps on ISIS, some budget action. And coming up, we're going to talk about the reaction to the U.S.-China climate change carbon emissions deal that we just heard about, talking about that as well as we continue. We're talking Congress right now with USA Today's politics editor, Paul Singer, talking about what's on the table for the so-called lame duck Congress, which is in session as of right now. And Paul, one thing we want to talk about is the news that President Obama had made an agreement with China on climate change. Was that also news to the legislature?
Yeah. Everybody was taken by some surprise, and it will not surprise you to know that the Republicans particularly were not particularly happy to hear about this. President Obama announced late last night, the White House announced late last night, that they had reached this this deal with China to cut greenhouse gas emissions. I should note, it's not really a binding deal. It's kind of like a plan to do these things. It's not actually a commitment to specific steps. Nevertheless, this morning, Republicans responded pretty negatively. Incoming Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said, you know, this is exactly the kind of executive, unilateral executive action we don't want this president taking. He said that he heard the message from voters that he wants the president to work with Congress to solve problems. This is not working with us. This is unilateral executive action. And by the way, McConnell, of course, you know, the way that you cut greenhouse gas emissions, particularly in the United States, is you start cutting down on coal-powered power plants, coal-fired power plants. Well, McConnell's entire reelection campaign was based on this notion of we will fight for coal. We will save coal from Obama's bad EPA. So when Obama then announces, oh, we're going to, you know, cut more climate change, cut more global warming emissions, it's basically a direct challenge to McConnell saying, hey, we're going to continue regulating coal and trying to shut down some of these plants.
Now, why wasn't Congress more involved in something like this? These talks were billed as something as 9 months of secret talks. So I guess why the secrecy?
Because you want to achieve something. I mean, the beauty of any kind of international negotiation, but particularly when dealing with the Chinese, they just don't have these conversations in public. Because the minute, of course, John Kerry would have said, oh, yeah, I'm meeting with the foreign minister of China to work on a deal on climate change, of course, Republicans would have been up in arms then as well and would have done everything to stop it. So there was no, I mean, secrecy was the only way you get to a deal. Now, of course, that also means you have absolutely no buy-in for the deal from anybody on the other side. And I think what's going to happen is the first thing the Republican Congress will do is pass some sort of a rider on a spending bill saying you shall not spend any federal money to implement new greenhouse gas reductions, period.
Right. So do you expect this to be weakened, this action that has happened, by some legislation down the road? And if that happens, does that mean China on their end weakens their commitment?
Well, you know, these commitments, of course, like I said, they're not really binding. I'm not sure how specific they are. And not being an expert in climate policy, I couldn't really tell you exactly what these deals entail. But, yeah, I mean, I'm almost certain the Congress will take some sort of steps to try and thwart any new regulations or any new restrictions from the Obama administration. Now, does that mean that China then backs away and says, well, you know, your Congress wouldn't do? I don't know. But, yes, I would be stunned if the Republican Congress did not take action to try and reverse whatever deal it is Obama has reached with the Chinese.
It's an interesting case that the secrecy, as you said, is a necessity. On the other hand, you look at something like the Iran nuclear talks, where there seemed to be a lot, maybe if not transparency, something closer to that, where a lot of people were weighing in along the process, which is ongoing. What's the difference?
Well, part of the difference is that there are very few Americans who have an economic interest in seeing Iran get a nuclear weapon. On the other hand, there are a lot of Americans who have a direct economic interest in avoiding stricter environmental regulations. So, I mean, it's a pocketbook issue to some degree, particularly in places like Kentucky where you mine coal. Coal has been an extraordinarily profitable part of American industry for 150 years or more, but it pollutes. It is a dirty fuel. And for folks in Kentucky, the view has been all along that the effort to address climate change is, quote, a war on coal, unquote, and a war on our pocketbooks. That is a reason to get up and fight. Iran having a nuclear weapon, even in rural Kentucky, they don't want that.
There has been criticism of China for not putting out harder numbers about their commitment, for instance, saying they're going to cut coal emissions, which is key to their story there as well. The United States is reliant on coal, and so is China. Do you see any reason to believe that is going to be a sticking point for both nations?
Well, again, see, now here you get into climate policy, which I know nothing about. I know much more about the politics of it. What I can tell you is that, you know, China has an advantage, an inherent advantage in implementing any of these kind of agreements, which is this. They don't have to go through a democratic process to get it approved. They don't have to go through their Congress to get sign-off on new restrictions on coal or they probably don't have to go through fairly remarkable restrictions to build a new nuclear power plant, for instance, more or less wherever they want to. Democracy is a complicated business, and it makes it very hard to do decisive things. So, to some degree, I'd have more expectation of the Chinese being able to execute their side of a deal than I would the U.S., because they don't have to go to a vote to get it done.
Now, in our last little bit of time here, I want to talk about immigration. Now, this is one that has been punted down the road for a long time.
Right.
Is there any hope on any kind of action here? Maybe, perhaps, as President Obama has foreshadowed, an executive action.
This is the great drama that we're awaiting. Obama has promised that he's going to take executive action on immigration because, he says, the Congress has failed to do so. The Republicans who will be leading the new Congress and who, you know, are in charge of the Republicans in the current Congress have said this will poison the well, as they say. This will prevent any kind of legislation from passing with the possible exception of legislation to undo whatever Obama does by executive authority. They are very concerned about this. Their argument is basically you cannot do by executive fiat what we have been, you know, trying to negotiate through Congress. Obama's response is, you have not been trying to negotiate this through Congress. You've just been trying to kill it, and I can't let you stall forever. There's 11 million people who need some sort of clarity about their status. We don't know whether we are actually going to get an executive order out of Obama before Christmas, but that has been the promise, and that is what he said he's going to do. Obviously, immigration advocates are breathing down his neck to get this thing done and to release something as soon as possible.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Veronica. Have a great day.
You too. We've been speaking with Paul Singer, politics editor at USA Today. He speaks with us every week at this time to talk Congress.